This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman, and welcome to the show that walks you through some fundamental concepts in the social sciences and humanities. Our regular host, Sharat Kutan, can't be here today. He's off at a media freedom conference in Bangkok. But we are joined by two of my comrades from Nottingham University, Douglas Chang and Adele Lim. Welcome.
Hi.
Hello.
As you know, Night School tries to reveal how various thinkers have grappled with theories and frameworks the better to understand how society works. And today we're going to talk about this book that's been making ripples in cultural studies in Asia. And that's Asia as Method by Kwan Sing Chen. Before we get into the crux of it, guys, perhaps you can tell me why it is that people are reading this book.
Asia as Method is part of a movement in cultural studies where Chen Kwan Sing is one of the key founders. He's this founder of this movement called Inter-Asia Cultural Studies, which tries to locate cultural studies back into Asia instead of relying on Western theorizations all the time. Because when we think about cultural studies, it's a very British or American kind of phenomenon, right? And what Chen Kwan Sing is trying to do is to bring it back to Asia, essentially, yes.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps you can tell the readers a bit about who he is, what's his background, and what his research interests are.
Chen Kwan Sing is a professor currently in National Chiao Tung University in Taiwan. His main works now currently are focused on things like division, and also trying
social divisions.
Division in the broad sense of the term. So, for instance, things like the division between North Korea and South Korea, the division between Taiwan and China. It's this kind of stuff that he is currently quite into right now.
Mm-hmm. And that's very distinctly Asian in a way, you know, in the sense that there are many, not only countries formed out of division, but also wars and conflicts. I mean, you think of South Asia as one example, the partition out of which Pakistan and Bangladesh came to be.
Yes.
In some ways, in more milder forms, even Indonesia and Malaysia, of course, it was not.
Yep.
I mean, there was the confrontation.
Yes.
Right? And it happened differently, but it is a really a Cold War legacy that we still live with today.
Yes, that's right. And what he, part of the reason why he's so obsessed with this is because of the profound effects on the person itself, the individual subjects who are part of this kind of systems. So he's saying that it's actually something that's embodied within our experiences. So this kind of divisions, for instance, the Malaysian and Singaporean division, you know, that's something that's very contemporary, right? And it's something that we experience as well. And this is why he places a lot of importance on this.
I think what I appreciate most about his method is changing and shifting the points of reference back to Asia, because the one of the key points that actually appears in his book a lot is the whole idea of not forcibly applying a Eurocentric or American-centric theory back onto Asia where it doesn't fit, because it actually then erases a lot of pre-existing structures that are no longer seen after that. And in that sense, from looking at Asia as Method, you sort of have a space where people can actually learn from each other in looking at, for example, in looking at the situation of Malaysia, bouncing it back against maybe the situation in Taiwan, you actually, or in India, you actually learn more about themselves, which helps you reflect back on your own situation. And if there's a dialogue between these two countries, then you actually create a body of study that's created within Asia for Asia rather than from outside.
That's interesting, you know, because sometimes I forget that, right? I mean, a lot of the canon is either Anglo-American or French-German. Yes. And we tend to take what they produce as universal, right? So we tend to think what Foucault wrote in 1977 should hold in all contexts and all cases, even when they don't really necessarily hold that. The authors themselves don't think of it that way.
Yep.
They think of themselves as French thinkers, as thinkers of modernity, but not necessarily outside that context. And then as students of understanding our own world, we transplant these frameworks without thinking, right? So it seems to me that this book is a good intervention to say, hold up, A, these are theories produced in a different context. B, why not we learn from each other too?
Yes.
And I think the one interviewer of Chen Guanxing actually, when he was describing Chen Guanxing in the first paragraph, he called him a networker, and I think that's it's a pretty bad term to use, networking, you know, but it's true in some sense, because what Chen Guanxing does a lot is to network with a lot of Asian scholars and try and bring them to the table. That's part of the Inter-Asia Cultural Studies project. So we get all the Asian thinkers together, and we try and relate to one another, because the basis is very simple, right? Because why don't we learn from our not so distant neighbors, instead of taking something, you know, from Malaysia to Singapore is just like a couple of hours away. So why are we, you know, going so far into Europe to get our theorizing? And that doesn't make sense to him. So he's saying even geographically, there is something practical that can be done. So what we can do is just to, you know, meet up in Korea. Everybody meet up in Korea. Think about our own situations, mm-hmm. and try and relate to one another. And, you know, we can switch places. So we go to Taiwan, we go to China, we go to Japan. Mm-hmm. And that's part of his entire project, actually.
Asians mobilizing Asians rather than using the West as a meeting point. So instead of looking at Asian studies in Berkeley, why not look at any studies that has been done in Asia as Asia studies? Yep. Why does it have to be only recognized as Asian studies if it was done in an American university?
Yep. And that's part of his project. He's trying to, I think he used this term before, it's basically decentering knowledge production.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it, he relates one of his experiences. He says that the funny thing about Taiwanese scholars when he was just coming out after his PhD, not too long, he says he hasn't met any Taiwanese scholars within Asian context, but rather they meet in America, and then, oh, suddenly yes. we know one another, and oh, by the way, we might be ending up in the same university soon, you know? And yeah. and that those are the kinds of ironies that he points out, and he says that, well, this shouldn't be the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds very interesting, because like you said, we are all graduate students. We know it does become peculiar when you think about it, that all the interesting discussions about Asia are not happening in Asia.
Yes.
You know? Yes. So it's being produced somewhere else. And this sounds very appealing to me, because the prospects of rediscovering home with theoretical lenses that we produce ourselves, very, very tempting. But the more I think about it, the more I start to wonder what this Asia is referring to, right? Because there are these outliers like Azerbaijan or Central Asia. Uh-huh. They are Asian, but not necessarily in the kind of cosmopolitan development of capitalism that East and Southeast Asia are in, right?
Yeah.
Places like the Middle East too. Somehow, rightly or wrongly, they are a part of a lot of Asian institutions, right? So what is this Asia that he's talking about? Is he essentializing a bit?
Not exactly, because Asia as method is not something that mobilizes a imaginary category of Asia per se, but rather I like to think of it as a critical reflexive kind of practice where we are looking outwards for sources of information while reflecting inwards. So if for instance we were to come up with Malaysia as method, it can't be something to analyze Malaysia. We can't use Malaysia as method to analyze Malaysia. We can use Singapore as method to analyze Malaysia, because it's more, we are drawing from a source called Asia to look at our own situation rather than vice versa. Of course, as part of the analysis, as the analysis goes through, you will find things that you can relate back to Asia as well. So I think that's the kind of process that's going through.
To look inwards in that sense would be what he calls narcissistic.
Mm-hmm,
the whole idea of you, the narcissistic idea of a country that is only bound by its own nationalist ideology and discourse and unable to see beyond.
Yes.
I see. Mm-hmm. So Asia as in a construction or project that's always in tension with itself and always in negotiation with the outside world.
Yes.
And knowledge production, therefore, is not static. It's sort of always dynamic and always in some sort of conversation with what's outside it.
Yes. So in a sense, Asia as method is something that is always comparative in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always comparing different situations with one another. So one of Chen Guanxing's intellectual depth is to this Japanese scholar called Takeuchi Yoshimi, who basically, he looks, he compares Japan and China and their modernization. Mm-hmm. And he says that, well, there are different things. And as a Japanese scholar, he finds it fruitful to look at China to reflect on their own situation. So how is it that is China modernizing differently from Japan? Mm-hmm. And he comes up with some simple conclusion saying that China modernizes from within and Japan is modernizing from without.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you see, so this is these are some things that we can think about if we relate to our own situation. And that is the kind of project that Cheng Kuan-Singh is trying to advance.
It sounds very appealing, but somehow a part of me is recalling to similar projects perhaps has been done. So postcolonial studies, right, mm-hmm, has produced mm-hmm. a wealth of researchers and literature, and you have a lot of work even in Southeast Asia, right? I'm thinking of Benedict mm-hmm. Anderson's book yes. called Spectres of Comparison.
Yeah.
Where he actually talks about this, how there is this relationship between the Southeast Asian country and their colonial center
mm-hmm. yes.
that is very unique, that cannot be compared to their relationship with their neighbors even,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't think it's as fleshed out as what Asia's method is trying to do, but mm-hmm. there are predecessors.
Mm-hmm, right.
What sets this apart than previous projects like Benedict Anderson's or the post-colonial studies discourse?
I would say the idea of what he calls de-Cold War, as in not just looking at decolonization and de-imperialization, but also the whole looking at the effects, the aftermath of the Cold War, which although not really said much in discourse, seems to be quite a big issue, because a lot of anti-communist discourse came from the aftermath of the Cold War, which is something that affects us in Southeast Asia as well.
Yes.
But it's not really something that's talked about. I mean, discussing this with academics, you say, well, but the Cold War has nothing to do with us, you know? Mm-hmm. We weren't involved in it. But that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam mm-hmm. and the States and British attempts to drive out communism in Malaya and such. So yeah. It's not really completely unrelated to us at all.
Yeah.
Not as much as we'd like to think it is.
I would like to go one step further and say that I'm not sure whether I'm doing him justice for saying this, but it is always tied to the international relations of the present.
Mm-hmm.
That so he brings things in to him, globalization and imperialism is very important. So the current effects on US on the economy as a whole, for instance, how a globalized modernity is changing things. To him, those are very important. It's not purely a historical thing. Even as he goes into history, he's trying to elucidate the effects on the people at present. To him, the suffering of the people and stuff is very important to him.
I think one thing I'd like to add to that is also much canon post-colonial literature focuses a lot on Western colonization, England, France, black versus white, black mm-hmm. versus color. But one very big chunk of history that has been overlooked, and especially in this part of the world, is the Japanese occupation.
Mm-hmm.
It is rather amazing to me that 4 years of occupation and 4 years of trauma can be so hidden and no longer talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And after reading Asia's Method, a lot of the things that he talks about start to make sense, especially when he starts analysing the relationship between Japan and China and Taiwan. And then when you think about Malaysian Chinese history, how much of it has to do with the exodus of Chinese from China over to Malaya. It shouldn't be something that's forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be dismissed as not part of post-colonial literature, mm-hmm. because if the Japanese colonized us, then the end of that period of colonization is by default post-colonial. So why is it not included in part of literature as well, post-colonial literature?
It really makes the whole notion of imperialism in Asia more lucid. It gives it a clearer vision and
yes.
perspective in which we can better understand it.
Yes.
Because right now, you're right. I mean, prior to this, a Southeast Asian wanting to engage in the discourse of decolonization will still have to rely on post-colonial
yes.
literature
yes.
with its own cultural limitations as well.
There's very specific context that cannot be extrapolated over here. That black skin, white mask, it's not really applicable in the case of Japanese versus Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
It's we're all Asian. Mm-hmm. So where does the racial context come in?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Asia as Method gives you that space to explore that without having to forcibly use a pre-existing framework.
That's wonderful. That's awesome. You've been listening to Douglas Shang and Adele Lim. I am Ahmad Fuad Rahmat. This is Night School. We'll be right back after this break. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you are listening to Night School. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, joined today by Douglas Shang and Adele Lim of the School of Modern Languages and Cultures in Nottingham University, Malaysia campus. We are discussing Asia as Method by Cheng Kuan Sing. If you just joined us, we're actually talking about the impact and implications of the Cold War, particularly how it manifested in Southeast Asia and Asia, more broadly speaking, on the production of knowledge and theories about understanding ourselves. And that's one of the key contributions of this book in Inter-Asia Cultural Studies, this new discourse that's starting to take off, that's attempting to enhance our understanding of our own culture beyond national boundaries, beyond the confines of ethnicity and provincialism, towards a broader regional view and seeing how we're all interconnected. I do want to talk more about the legacy of the Cold War, in particular in Malaysia. And I think, Adele, you made a really good point when you say that we forget that very easily, right? So even in everyday discourse, if you look at the national newspapers or national politics, the specter or the ghost of our colonial history is largely a Western one. We talk about the invasion of Malacca, the dominant nationalist discourse, at least, you know, talks about invasion of Malacca, the Jews or the British or foreign capital as largely a Western thing. But we've somehow managed to block out Japanese imperialism. And in that, I think it still remains under-researched, right? Why is that the case, Adele? Why have we somehow not breached the subject more critically?
That's something I've been wondering about myself, because if not for my grandmother bringing it up to me, it would not even have registered in my mind. I mean, it's not something that I remember clearly from school. From school, you always have the British resident versus the local hero. You don't really have any stories of the Japanese occupation unless you counter it against the evil communist kind of thing. So I think we take for granted the whole idea of British dominance over our national discourse, as that we were modernized because of the British. And I wonder how much of that actually has to do with a systematic erasing of history by the British or by the eventual rulers of the country. How much of that I do not know, because I don't have any research to enlighten me on that.
Looking at this from Asia's Method perspective, you'd see a big part of Malaysian history, because the Japanese occupation ties into the larger story of Chinese diaspora, larger imperial capitalist ambitions of a modernizing Japanese empire, you have a different view of Malaysia. And I think this is one of the things that I find interesting about the project, is that it's not just an intellectual project, right? Asia's Method is offering a new way of understanding subjectivity, is a new way of understanding ourselves as citizens. So when you look at, I mean, I'm looking at your story, Adele, like how the Japanese was a deep part of not only the story of the country, as in a kind of historical, factual sense, but also your grandmother's subjectivity and now your subjectivity, right? So how does he transfer that intellectual exercise into an actual rediscovering of yourself?
One of the terms that Cheng Kuan Sing uses is let's talk about two. One is that he uses the term sentimental. And to him, sentimentality is one of these things that needs to be analyzed and unpacked as well, because these are the effects that are very real on the people. So if you have, he relates his experience of his mother who was schizophrenic. In the book itself, he talks about that, and even as she is schizophrenic, she actually does things like leave a bowl of rice and curse Chiang Kai-shek and stuff like that. And he sees this as a very traumatic kind of experience, and he's saying that these kinds of experiences are very real, and we can never separate this from analysis altogether. So that is how he would look at it, I think. Adele, do you have anything to add?
I think his method gives the researcher a space for placing themselves within the narrative. You cannot, especially if you're looking at history, whatever happened to the previous generations, you cannot divorce yourself from it because it affects you. What your grandparents went through, what your parents went through, and what you go through, it's like a flow of history, and to remove yourself from it would be a fallacy. It would be saying that you're placing yourself out of it.
And I think Asia as Matter as a whole mobilizes this because he actually talks a lot about his... he says that Taiwan is my anxious home. And he uses anxiety, this kinds of anxiety, when we are faced with our own experiences, our traumas and stuff, how this would change the way we perceive ourselves and perceive others. So, in that sense,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right that he gives a good reminder that whenever we think of our research as objective or scientific or whatever,
yeah.
In a kind of consistent framework, we often forget that there's a lot of emotional investment.
Yes.
You know, especially as researchers, yes. we know how much time we spend alone yeah. in the solitary company of yeah. books. It's a very personal process.
Yeah.
Plus also, I think we sometimes forget how inconsistent history can be. As in, even within the space of 10 years, you can have so many differences in terms of policy change that mm. what your grandparents did and what they had to study, what they had to learn, the entire culture surrounding them is completely different from what we are experiencing now.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall once I was doing a workshop for some foreign students from the UK campus of Nottingham University. And I realized that I started talking in a very... I was trying to be white when I was talking to them, you know.
Trying to impress them.
Yeah, trying to impress them. But you see, these are the effects of colonization and imperialism that we don't really realize. Why is it that I need to become white to talk to white people, you know?
Yeah.
Why is there that bit of anxiety there?
Yeah, and why does
can't
this,
measure up.
Yeah, why do I feel like I can't measure up to these people? And mm-hmm. these are the kind of anxiety that should, I think, in Chen Kuan Sing's ideas, should be driving your own research as well.
Mm-hmm.
These are... which is why to him, decolonization, deimperialization, all these are very worthwhile projects to chase after,
mm-hmm.
I think.
That's fascinating. I sense that we've been quite liberal with our use of we when we talk about Asia and Asians.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe we risk homogenizing a bit, you know, especially the margins that are really expanding in Asia, right? The migration of laborers in China from the mm-hmm. rural to the urban centers and all the problems there is. The migration of workers into Malaysia from all over Southeast Asia. Who is speaking for Asia? Who should speak for Asia? What are the problems therein? How does he negotiate the complexities of the we in Asia?
Mm. His approach is very idealistic. I think I think we have to acknowledge that. He calls it critical syncretism. So basically, it's a very simple idea. He's just saying that the most important thing for us to do is to identify with the oppressed. And we have to try and become the oppressed, so become the other. So how would it be like to feel like a homosexual? How would it be like to feel like a subaltern person? And these are... So it's empathy that's driving his kind of research. And yeah, so it causes a sense of... how do I put this? It should trigger some sense of anxiety in yourself. You know, you have to look at yourself and then you have to think about how is it that I relate to this person? How is it that I'm really different from this person? How is it that I'm similar with this person?
I think also the question of why Asians have to define themselves as opposed to what is not Asian. If we are Asian, Asia, an Asian is an Asian. Why do we have to define ourselves in a way that can be understood by someone not Asian in that sense. So you might get an English woman saying, I'm English, I'm from the United Kingdom, and no one would question her. What do you mean by the United Kingdom? You're not united.
Mm-hmm,
but mm-hmm. why is it that Asians have to define as, oh, you know, this is Asia, this is we are like. So you have to explain it in a way that's understandable by someone else. Why do we have to do that?
Mm-hmm.
It is your own form of identification. Yeah. I am Malaysian, I am Asian. Why do I have to explain that to you
mm-hmm.
in a way that acceptable to you as opposed to how I identify myself.
Yeah, but of course, part of the analysis itself would have to look at the fluid subjectivities that we are part of.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I think for instance, Southeast Asia, the history is very complex and multi-layered, right? That is also part of the point that Farish Noor tries to point out through his deconstructions of history in Malaysia, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that is something that we need to take on board with us. I think that's what
Cheng Kuan Sing is trying to say. The boundaries created by nationalism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we have this perspective, we have these considerations, we bring our research, and then we still have to engage the so-called canon of Anglo-American, French-German thinkers. What happens to our relationship to the canon once we apply this approach? Does it become just another interlocutor, or does it become less important? What do we come back to the canon with?
It becomes, I think it becomes something like a culture. That's a bad way to put it.
I think the beauty of it is that you can still keep it as a frame of reference. He doesn't tell you to throw it out. He doesn't become anti-West in that sense. You can keep it as a frame of reference, but it no longer becomes the only point of reference for you.
Yeah.
So you can bounce ideas off the West, and if it doesn't, the Western canon literature, and if it doesn't work, then look back within and look back without Asia. So you don't have to reject any of them in that sense.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he still says we still need to be very cautious,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to things like Eurocentrism, colonialism and stuff, because these are very real effects, which is why he always looks into the psychic element, the pain that we feel, the anxiety that we have, because these are manifesting itself in present day. So it's not like there is no basis for what we are trying to say. And at the end of the day, if we were to go into stuff like this, we will still have to draw from our canon, right? Mm-hmm. So post-colonial literature, we definitely have to think about Fanon one way or another. There is no two way about it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's trying to say, of course, you can't just take it and apply it wholesale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are also other resources that we might be overlooking in trying to just look at the canon. That's what he's trying to say. So we can look into different literary scholars, for instance. The one literary scholar that inspires him the most is this Taiwanese writer called Chen Yingzhen, whose project actually tallies with himself. So he talks about things like the Cold War effects on the people, the Japanese occupation of Taiwan, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This book has been widely read, widely reviewed. What are some of the criticisms that you've come across that you feel is worth taking with you when you read this?
I think part of the criticism, of course, is... Yeah, I've read a review of the book by this PhD student from School of Oriental and African Studies in London. And his main criticism was that Cheng Kuan Sing should have defined Asia in the very beginning. And Asia cannot be this... You can't talk about inter-Asia cultural studies to him without actually setting the scope of what Asia is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a fair criticism?
I don't think it's a fair criticism, to be honest. I mean, when it comes down to it, because... Asia in Cheng Kuan Sing's point of view is supposed to be a resource, just like Western theories. So it's a resource that we can draw upon to learn more about ourselves. So if Asia becomes something that is stagnant, then there's only so much that it can be mobilized to actually think up about new situations.
But also for him to have defined Asia from the very beginning would be to set boundaries for other people that they might have trouble crossing.
Mm-hmm.
So that would essentially be against what he's trying to talk about in his book, going against it.
We've been talking about Asia as method, a very key text right now that's being read in across cultural studies in Asia. Can you describe the book a bit? Is it written in accessible prose? Is it get really laden with theoretical jargon? What's the experience of reading it like?
He uses very accessible language. Mm-hmm. It's easy to read. The concepts are complex but not overly complicated. Mm-hmm. And because he places his own experiences as well as what he has gleaned from other academics and friends around Asia where he traveled, it becomes accessible to the reader, because in that sense, it's already happening even as the reader reads it. I am reading what he says, reflecting on my own experiences and learning from what he says, and yet being able to rethink what's happening to me at the same time.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. You've been listening to BFM Night School. I am Ahmad Fuad Rahmat. Alongside me today are my comrades from Nottingham University in Malaysia. If you're impressed by them, you might want to consider enrolling in the program.
Definitely.
It is Douglas Shang and then Adele Lim. Do you tweet? No? Tweet?
Not really.
They don't tweet like myself. We don't tweet. I don't know why people in Malaysian Cultural Studies don't tweet. But we are on Facebook, and that's BFM Night School. Just type that under search space. Or if you have comments, questions about the show, or about our guests, or to our guests, please email us at bfmnightschool@gmail.com. Once again, this is Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, and you've been listening to Night School on 89.9 BFM, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.